fact, this is very much one of the most important things I want to leave after 22 years. This is vital to me. In the 24th chapter of Matthew, starting with the first verse, Jesus starts this conversation. It actually comes out of something that the disciples bring to him. The disciples bring this question to Jesus, or they bring this observation. And so it says that Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. Now, we know enough about from all the passages to know that they're in awe of these temple buildings. I mean, if you look at any of the old ruins, and if you've ever been anywhere in the world where you can see the old ruins, they're awesome. They're incredible to look at. But so the disciples are calling Jesus' attention to this incredibly awesome temple. And this is his response. And out of it comes this wonderfully interesting conversation. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "Truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." That happens in 70 AD. It's totally destroyed. In fact, if you go to Rome and you go there and see the Colosseum and go into the Colosseum, what you can know is that Colosseum was built by Jewish slave labor after Israel is taken over and the temple destroyed. Interesting. So through all of that is this fascinating continuum in our history when you go and look at it. But listen, as Jesus talks about this, so he moves and he's sitting on the Mount of Olives. And the disciples come to him privately because they have this big question. And I don't think this is a question that's unusual at all. In fact, it's so usual that I believe it becomes a problem for all of us. We don't like to think of it as a problem usually, especially in evangelical churches. We don't like to think of it as a problem. But listen to the question. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And the next two words are, "Jesus answered." So the 24th chapter, basically, of Matthew, for about two-thirds of it, is his direct answer to their question. And so that direct answer is interesting. He talks about a number of things, and I think I heard more sermons on 24th chapter of Matthew than I can imagine growing up. Because we like to talk about, we like to figure out what was going to happen at the end of the age. We like to think, okay, and it was put together with Daniel, and it was put together with the book of Revelation, and there was all kinds of things that were done, and we talked about all of this stuff and what we could look for, and we would be talking about how soon Jesus was going to return, and all of those things were part of it, okay? So as Jesus answers that question as well as anybody could possibly answer it, as you can imagine, we now get down to the 36th verse. And the 36th verse of that chapter starts something that becomes the crux of what Jesus says to his disciples in the sandwich between what I just read to you and these verses in Matthew 26, 1 and 2, which are, when Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "As you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." So here's the sandwich. We have it right in between. The disciples don't have a clue. They've come out of the temple, and they get to thinking about what's going to happen in the end times. And so they ask the question of Jesus. Jesus gives them that answer, and then he takes them to the crux of the matter. And here's where it starts. "No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father." So he makes that really plain. And then he goes down and he says, he just repeats that basically, and he gives it with example, as it was in the days of Noah. It'll be like people will be marrying, they'll be giving in marriage, things are just going to be going normal, and boom, it's going to come. So he wants them to know something. You're not going to know. So then he goes down to the 42nd verse and he says this: therefore keep watch, or make sure you're prepared. The translations vary on this, but it's some form of this that says basically make sure you're prepared. You're always ready. Okay? And so he gives a few other examples, and then he gets to this point where he gives us a parable. And remember, skip the chapter stuff. The chapters mean nothing. They were added many, many centuries later, the chapters and verses in Scripture. So forget that stuff, because oftentimes we try to take it apart with those. Don't do that. Don't do that. So the conversation is continuing. So Jesus gets down and he says, I want to give you one more illustration of this. And he says, there's these 10 virgins. And how many of you have heard and know the story of the 10 virgins? We all heard it, didn't we? Many times. And five, they were waiting for the bridegroom to come. And it gets to be late at night. He hasn't come. It's kind of unexpected. And five of them were foolish and five of them were wise. And the five that were wise simply were prepared for whatever time this happened. And five of them were foolish and didn't think ahead and weren't ready and hadn't prepared themselves for what happened. So they're left outside at the wedding feast. Now that's a really interesting parable. And it's one that Jesus gives within this context of no one knows the day or the hour. So he ends the parable with this: therefore, be ready, be prepared, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. Here it is, there it is again. See? He's just repeating this theme. We don't know this day or hour, so we need to get prepared. Now, that leads me so that you have the context. We have 2 days before Jesus is going to be crucified, and we have an answer to the question that we often face of our interest in what's going to happen with the end times. And Jesus brings it to this after he goes through some things that are just interesting for us to see and understand. He says, but here's what you need to know. You don't know when it is. And that's not the issue. The issue is that you're ready. And here then comes the crux of it. He gives us in the next two stories what it means to be ready. That's what he's going to do now. And that's where I want to go this morning and next week, because the interesting thing is that we take these passages without understanding their context or watching what the early church did with these. I won't get to what the early church did with these this morning. Next week, we'll go further into this, because this is incredible, because an entire aspect of how the early church lives comes out of this. The way they view people and the way they view life come out of these passages. So let's take a look at the two stories that Jesus now gives that are so vital to us, that are sandwiched in between, that we need to fully hear. Or are we kind of like Jesus knew his disciples were, so he had to give them the answers that they were looking for and then say to them, but understand something. You don't have a clue, I don't have a clue, when really all of this stuff's going to happen. Only the Father knows that. And the angels in heaven don't know that. So can I tell you what it means to be ready all the time? And here it is. Again, it will be like a man going away on a journey. Now, let me ask you a question, because you know the context now. I'll ask it so you see it coming through. Who is the bridegroom? with the 10 virgins? It's Jesus, isn't it? He's going to make that clear and clear all the time. Who is the man who goes away in the parable that we're going to read now? It's Jesus. He's telling the stories. In fact, when he gets to the last story, he uses the term the Son of Man. Okay? But in here, he does what he often does. He gives the illustration with a story they understand. So, here's what happens. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who calls his servants and entrusts his property to them. He entrusts all that he has to them, his property to them. To one he gives 5 talents, to another he gives 2 talents. And you heard the story and you know the story. So I'm not going to read it to you, I'm going to tell it to you as we go along. So what takes place is this really interesting thing, of course. And we often think that that the one with 5 was the lucky guy, okay? Or he was the one that was gifted more, whatever it was. And we use the word talents because it's a nice word for us to use, and it's actually the word that is meant there. But talents is a unit of money. And it's approximately, in today's world, it would be something like $1,000 or somewhere roughly equivalent to that. So some of the translations will even put it in that way. It's a unit of money. But it was never viewed as just a unit of money. This was viewed as coming from the Father himself, or from the Master himself. So the Master gives 5 of these units of money, however bags of money, as Brenda had it, to one of the servants. He gives 2 to another. He gives 1 to another. Now, you know what takes place. They don't have a clue when he's coming back. But what happens is he says, he gives this to them, and 2 of them do exactly what would please their master. They simply set to work with what is his, what he has given them. And they say, what can I do with this? What can I do with what's been given me? And they do a good job. So it doesn't really matter here. Don't worry about the 5 and the 2 and the 1, because note something. The master doesn't see it differently. He doesn't say to the one who had 2, you should have been able to produce 10. No, he just said, here's 2. And with that, whatever he's given, he's asking that person simply do something well with it. Take what they have and use it well. Invest it well. So that happens. And the 3rd one, of course, hides his, doesn't do anything with it, and the master is very displeased when he returns. Okay? Now there's another story that comes right behind that, and I want to give you that. The next story, I've always heard them preach separated, but you need to know they don't belong separate. They belong together. Jesus does this as one conversation with his disciples. So the next one is, in reality, answers the question that Jesus wants them to understand clearly. The gifts I give you, or what I leave you, I want you to invest so that you get a return on the investment that's going to last you forever in this heavenly kingdom. So you'll notice it starts with, these are all about a heavenly kingdom, or about the kingdom of heaven. So, and the kingdom of heaven starts here, remember. That's why in Scripture it can be used both directions, both ways. So he says, at the last day, and that last day is the accounting day. And he's just shared that. He said at the last day now, and he uses the word Son of Man, there's going to be an accounting of all of this, and this is what's going to matter. I'm going to say to a group on my right over here and a group on my left, I'm going to say, okay, all of you, when I was hungry, when I was thirsty, when I was naked, you took care of me. When I was in prison, when I was lonely, You took care of me. When I needed clothing, you were there for me. And they're going to say, wait, when did we do that? That very question makes something real. It's often difficult to understand how all of this links up between what I do today, right here, with what I've been given, and how it links directly to my account in heaven and with Jesus himself. So Jesus makes that clear. So what he says is, when you did these things for those that were in need, the least of these, those that were naked, those that did need clothes, those that did need food, those that did need a drink, those that were lonely, those that were in prison, when you did this for them, you did it for me. Those on the left, he says to them, when I was hungry, you didn't feed me. When I was thirsty, you didn't give me something to drink. He goes through the whole thing again. And they say, what do you mean? When didn't we do that for you? And the same response, except that it goes that other direction, is that when you didn't do it for those that needed it, for those that were the least of these, that didn't have clothes, that didn't have food. Okay, so you have this piece where Jesus says, now, you've got to be ready. Here is what to do to be ready. I'm going to give you gifts. And now here's what I want you to hear this morning, because I can't possibly get enough of this in. So some of you will get this next week, okay? Get a piece of it next week. What is it God's given you? Say, I don't know. I haven't a clue. That is precisely, if you're saying haven't a clue, it's because you've grown up in a culture that doesn't perceive this whole thing that Jesus brings to us, that I've given you a great deal, and what I have given you, I simply want you to invest it in such a way that you're feeding me, clothing me, visiting me, taking care of me in prison, giving me drink, whatever it is I need. Because I am the head of this whole thing, this whole world. And whenever there's a little one that needs me, that needs to know they need, or needs to be loved, needs to be cared for, if there's anyone anywhere that needs that, I want you taking care of them with what I have given you. What has he given us? I think that is one of the great downfalls of the church in our institutional form, is we don't literally take this passage. I believe that Jesus says clearly to his disciples, because it then marks the early church very, very strongly. I believe Jesus is saying this directly. Jerry Hall, I want you to use just exactly what I have given you to make this world a better place. Period. And if you do it so that there's a return on the investment, so that there will come a day when I will stand directly before him and he will say, returned at an unexpected time, remember. Notice it even in this story. So I need to be doing this. I can't somehow wait for it. At that unexpected time, he's going to say, what did you do with what I gave you? What did you do with what I gave you? And it's not going to be enough to say, I went to church. It's not going to be enough to say, oh, hold on a minute, I'll run get it out of the ground. Or, because what that really is saying is, I really didn't want to take this and use it for anything but me. I want to spend my life for me. And if there's anything that makes the master angry, it's if we spend our life for me, for us. What he gives us, it's in the very nature of his creation and in the very nature of his design. What he gives us, made in his nature, out of his design, he says, I want it given. I want it invested. I want it invested wherever it is needed, so that when the day comes and I call account, I'll come and offer. We find out at other points in times that we will have things to lay at his feet that we don't understand now. Just like he mentions there. When did we ever see you hungry? He's linking it up. We're not going to always know what the return on it is, but he is. And when we come before him, whoever he made us to be, just like he made Brenda, just like he made each of these kids, and just like he made each of us, he's going to say, did you use it for the kingdom? Did you invest it so that this world would be better for it? That is 10 million times more important to him than you being able to quote 10 books of this. He's not going to say, how much did you know? He's not going to say, how many times did you go to church? He's not going to ask you how religious you were. He's going to ask you, what did you do with what I gave you? Wow. We'll continue that next week.